It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, stress. We've all got plenty of it, and the sources of stress are seemingly infinite. This hour, we'll talk about what stress does to our brains and our bodies and how to manage it. But first, we asked some people in Iowa City about what's stressing them out right now.
My new job, I guess. I'm just starting my new job, so...
The weather, it's really cold. Not the temperature, but the windy. So windy, so here.
Most pressing is obviously the political situation today. There's a lot at stake with my profession and my interest. I'm disappointed that arts and culture funding got cut from the Iowa state budget.
I guess balancing a full-time job while going to school is a little stressful sometimes.
Donald Trump.
My child's father. Working, and I have a one-year-old, and I have another one on the way. Just not being able to get along with him and knowing that we're bringing another life into this world, and basically, like, trying to go to school and work and stuff, like, it's hard. Like, it is real hard. Like,
lack of knowledge in what's going on with the government.
We also want to hear about what's stressing you out this hour and how you manage your stress. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Later in the hour, I'll talk with a psychotherapist who left a career in politics because of the stress and a mental health therapist who works mostly with an immigrant population. My first guest today is Dr. Hannah Stevens. She is an assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine who specializes in the study of stress. Hello, Dr. Stevens.
So glad to be here. Thanks, Charity.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And first, I mean, we all have stress in our lives. Do we need a little bit of stress?
Actually, that's a great first question because we don't want to paint this all as a negative. Actually, stress is really important for us to have a little bit in our lives. It's almost like you want to make a parallel to stimulation. So if you had absolutely no stimulation in your life, you wouldn't be able to learn things. Your body wouldn't develop right, your brain wouldn't develop right, and stress is a part of stimulation. And so actually when they began to study stress earlier in the 20th century, they identified pretty early on that stress is not doesn't have a linear relationship with good and bad. And so too little is bad and too much is bad, and there's a sweet spot right in the middle where we want to try to be getting ourselves a little bit of stimulation, a little bit of change, but not too much and not too little.
All right, so a little challenge in life is a good thing. Does our body respond to different kinds of stress in different ways? I mean, are there good stresses and bad stresses?
I would say that it does tend to be in the perception of stress often, not so much in the quality of it. As you heard from the folks that gave you information on what's stressing them out, it really depended on the person who you were talking to about what was stressful. And so for any given person, the same thing might be stressful or might not. So I would say we can't really classify things necessarily as good or stressful or not stressful. I think it tends to be in quantity or how long something goes on. That's a change and a challenge to your body and your brain. And then it depends on what you... what your expectations are, what your priorities are. Stress in the modern world is very much filtered through the sort of thinking we do and the feeling we do and our social connections. Stress maybe 1,000 years ago was still that way too, but it was a lot of physical things too. Although one of your interviewees did say something very physical, the weather, which, you know, 1,000 years ago was a bigger deal for people, and food and a shelter and all these things were a bigger deal. Nowadays, even the best stress researchers will say that as humans, our stress is much more in a social domain and much less in a physical domain. Although, of course, too much of a physical stressor can still be quite damaging.
Absolutely. And of course, in the winter months, we have a little more physical stress, although obviously there are many people who deal with those basic stress issues you were talking about, food, shelter.
Absolutely. And not to rule out that that doesn't happen, but I would say most of the folks that you were talking with were talking about interpersonal issues of long-term stability in their life, which are connected with shelter and having a job and it going well. Of course, they're connected to those things, but they were about sort of understanding what's going on around them, feeling like there was going to be art and things like that to turn to, the balance of the busy activities in our life. Many of these things are affecting us in that kind of social domain and how we think about things these days.
Now, stress affects us in different ways at different parts of our lives. And I know you've done a lot of study on prenatal stress. I want to set that aside for a moment. We'll come back to that later. But so when you're a kid and there's stress in your life, and kids can have stress, obviously.
Absolutely.
How does that affect a child differently than it might affect adult?
Well, I'd say first thing to note in childhood is that different things can be stressful to children. Not necessarily also, I mean, it is also true that they can affect kids differently, but something that an adult might not think would be a big deal can be very significant to a child. Adult might see a vacation to a beach as being like all good and not stressful at all, but a child might find that a disruption to their routine, and while they'll have a good time, they might find it, you know, just a little more stressful than an adult would. An adult might not think it was a big deal for there to be a substitute teacher for a day in a child's classroom, but for a young child who's making sort of real strong connections with adults in their life, to have their teacher be gone for a day might be, you know, pretty stressful for that child. And I would say in general, we think that children find transitions and changes in their lives to be more stressful than adults do, and for the effects to go on longer. It takes them longer time to adjust. And it's not that if you asked a child, oh, are you having trouble adjusting, that a child would be say, yes, I feel very stressed by the fact that I've just started preschool and, you know, I'm really trying to get used to this new routine. You would see it come out in different ways. So as you suggested, it affects kids in different ways. They're not going to say, oh my gosh, I just feel so stressed. I need to relax. I need to lie down. They're going to have a tantrum more easily. They're going to maybe not feel like eating. They might turn to a habit that, you know, they had when they were younger. They might show that they can't do something that they used to be able to do. They might not sleep as well, you know, toileting issues in really young kids. In older kids, it might come out as more irritability, lack of connecting with other people, because they don't necessarily yet know that turning to other people is a stress reliever and something that we can do to help ourselves. So, yeah, so there's really different reactions.
And kids are going through so many developmental changes that they may have a cranky day for any variety of reasons. But when does stress in a child's life, when does it become a problem?
That's a great question. I think that we know that really chronic stressors for sure are not good for children. And by that we mean there have been a lot of studies recently that have actually looked at the number of really adverse events that occurred in a child's life and link those actually to long-term consequences for health in both the physical and sort of the mental domains. And so the risk for cardiovascular disease, the risk for diabetes. So those are sort of long-term things in terms of we're not going to necessarily be predicting, seeing that in our own children, you know, this is going to happen over years. What could see in our own children or our own grandchildren or the, you know, kids maybe that we take care of is that, you know, when a child has trouble doing the things that they need to do, like sleeping well, like, continuing to learn and continuing to grow, then we might know that stressors have been too much. And I would say the kinds of things that are really tough on kids are things like changes to the family, loss of family members, major changes to the family structure. When things get very extreme, children are neglected. Physically or otherwise abused, those things can have lasting impacts on children's bodies and their brains, and can cause changes for them in the short run as well. Difficulties that manifest in other domains. So maybe they're being mistreated at school, but now they aren't connecting with their family as well because, you know, obviously that's impacting their ability to function, or the other way around, mistreated at home and then school. school starts to become a problem and a straight-A student becomes not able to function anymore. So looking for those little warning signs in the short run can be really helpful to knowing if stress has become overwhelming for a kid.
And childhood trauma is something that can come back in adulthood as well, that creates a lot of risk factors for adults. So now let's talk about adults. As an adult, what kinds of reactions do we have to stress? How does it affect us?
Well, so there are some really great researchers, actually, that I want to mention a couple names. So Dr. Robert Sapolsky has been a big stress researcher, and Dr. Bruce McEwen, who is actually Dr. Sapolsky's mentor, have done a lot of great work. And they have some great literature out there that I'll just mention also that I recommend for people to read if they want to know about this. So Dr. Sapolsky has a great book called Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers, which is kind of a funny take, but it has a lot of science on what stress does. And then Dr. McEwen with Elizabeth Lasley wrote a book called The End of Stress as We Know It. So those are some really great resources for folks. And they have found that what happens when we basically have a stress is that our body tries to adapt to the new challenge. You know, every stress basically is a change in the demand on either our brain or our body to adapt to. And our body does a pretty good job at that. It changes its hormones. It changes its, you know, release of different factors. It changes how the brain functions in that moment to meet that demand. And then it'll return to sort of its, you know, set level. And the place that this really changes is if the stressor keeps coming back repeatedly or has a chronic nature to it, that you can actually have a really problematic reaction to having all of those changes happen over and over and over again.
When stress occurs in our lives, and it will, obviously, for all of us, we will be stressed by various things. What is a scenario that seems to be most difficult for people? Is it when we're stressed by something but don't have control over it?
You've hit the nail on the head. Yeah, absolutely. So I think we'll probably learn more in speaking with Dr. Smith later on in ways that we can cope with stress. But the things that we say that folks can do to help with stress are exactly, if we look at the opposite of those things, that's when we become the most vulnerable to stress, is if we don't have control over the situations in which we're in, if we can't do the things that typically keep us healthy, getting you know, good nutrition, sleeping, having physical activity. If we're sort of put in a position where, let's say one of the people you interviewed had said, I'm so
we'll
busy.
We'll have to pick it up right after the break. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm here with Dr. Hannah Stephen. She's an assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. We're talking about stress this hour on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about stress, and we're going to move into talking a little bit about stress management. We all have to deal with it in one way or another, and so we also asked some people in Iowa City to tell us about how they cope with stress.
I'm a nature lover, so I take to the outdoors when I want to manage my stress. I go on a hike. I spend some time in the sun. I'll go somewhere with trees, and I also do meditation and yoga.
I'm in therapy. I'm currently, like, peeling away my entire life, and it's vicious and brutal.
I try to stay positive, stay on a positive note.
Well, I don't do drugs anymore, so maybe a little alcohol, Camel cigarettes. So
I make a list every week of what I need to get done for work, and then school just kind of falls in place in between that list where I can work it in.
I swim every day for an hour. I do Pilates twice a week. I walk 5 miles, and I do an hour worth of exercises every morning.
All right, so some ways to deal with stress, some healthy, some not so healthy, but realistic for sure. If you would like to share what's stressing you out, how you cope with stress, we'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before I introduce our next guest, with me right now is Dr. Hannah Stephen. She's an assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. She specializes in the study of stress. And we were just talking before the break about when stress is particularly difficult for people to deal with, that sense of helplessness, as if things that are happening to you and causing you stress are outside of your control. So that's a point at which stress becomes particularly dangerous for people?
Yeah, I'd say so, because it can then go on for much longer, and that's when we think stress really becomes a problem. As we said, having a little bit of stress is necessary, in fact, but if it goes on longer, we have things happen in our bodies that we probably understand at the best level in the brain. So we actually have changes to our ability to learn things. We can't learn as well. We may have actual changes to the cellular structures that make up our brain. We have changes to the control of the all the regulation that occurs in there, and it changes our ability to then use our resilience and use our coping skills. Because if the brain changes, that means you can't think the positive things, like one of your interviewers was talking about, thinking positive or planning and making control, you know, making a list and being in control of things. And if your brain's not working as well because it's under stress, it's kind of a little bit of a vicious cycle sometimes,
because where you that get can lead to more stress.
Exactly. And sometimes that's when people need to turn to someone else to sort of give them a little scaffolding. You know, therapy is a very useful process for gaining that perspective, taking a look at life, feeling like you understand it better, developing really short-term skills that you can implement, like meditation. One of your folks talked about activity. These all actually change the physiology. They change the brain, too, and that's why you can bring yourself out of that cycle, which is negative in the physiology but reflects at the level of our thinking and our feeling of being, you know, inescapable if you don't turn it around.
Now, we've all heard a lot in recent years about post-traumatic stress disorder. So this is something that people can experience when they've been in extreme stress situations. So what happens, and, you know, it doesn't have to be combat, obviously. There are many different incredibly stressful situations
exactly.
that can lead to this. But tell me what happens when somebody is in one of these extraordinarily stressful situations.
So, you know, our body has a natural ability to cope with extremely stressful situations, the fight or flight response. And if we didn't have that, we'd be in a lot of trouble because we wouldn't be able to respond when we really need to. And we think that what happens in PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder is that natural ability of the body gets a little bit hijacked by the experience. And we're not sure if it's because of particular genetic vulnerabilities that people have or early experiences in their life that make their brain more vulnerable to that fight or flight sort of taking over. But basically, the fight or flight gets turned on and then abnormally activated sort of all, you know, for, you know, long terms after that very short event has actually resolved itself. And so you have someone who may then have fight or flight responses to everyday things that another person would not have any stress response to at all. But because it has some kind of connection to the thing that that happened to them, to the trauma, they'll have reactions to that. It changes the physiology. It puts the brain in a very difficult situation. People have shown that you may have actually degeneration of parts of the brain in the setting of post-traumatic stress disorder. And of course, then you also then have a very, as we were painting the picture, if you, that becomes the cycle, you have a lot less ability to sort of pull yourself out of it. And we do think that for PTSD, really, the first line treatment is getting into therapy. And there are sometimes medications that can help as well if there are comorbid problems going on with depression, which is very frequent in people with PTSD or other issues.
Well, and we heard from one of our interviewees earlier. He said, I don't do drugs anymore. Well, that substance abuse can also become a problem when people are experiencing extreme stress because they turn to substances to numb that stress, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's a short-term coping strategy that seems to make your body feel more... maybe it allows you to forget. You know, sometimes the effects of alcohol are sort of a forgetting effect, or maybe it causes some physical relaxation or an ability to go, go, go when your stress is the fact that you have a million things to do. But in the long run, that's not actually a normal way for your body or your brain to be acting. And the using of those substances often has other effects as well as sort of shifting you out of a normal state of physiology, all the kinds of things that come along with doing substances. And so that obviously is difficult, but happens to a lot of people who are struggling with very severe mental health problems.
I'm talking with Dr. Hannah Stevens. She's an assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. We're going to focus on dealing with stress now, and we're focusing mostly this hour on some of the everyday stresses that all of us encounter. We'd love to hear from you as well, 866-780-9100. I want to bring Emily Smith into the conversation. She's a psychotherapist. She owns Prairie Wellness in Des Moines, and she left a career in politics because of the stress. Hello, Emily.
Hi, Charity. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And, of course, as we've already heard, politics is one of the things that's stressing a lot of people out these days. You have firsthand experience in working on campaigns. Tell me a little bit about your background.
Sure. I got involved in campaigns way back in 1983 when I was a student at Iowa State. We're lucky because we have the Iowa caucuses here, of course, and decided to actually make a career in politics. So for 16 years, I ran political campaigns and issues-oriented campaigns all over the country. So House races, Senate races, gubernatorial races, and worked on several presidential campaigns.
So you left that career because of the stress. I think everybody knows that's an incredibly stressful career. You also worked on Gary Hart's campaign. I can imagine that got extremely stressful after time. Yes. what was it that led you to think, I need to make a change?
Well, for me, several things happened, both physically and emotionally. As I, when I first started out, I loved the stress. I thrived on it. It was exciting. You know, I worked really hard, but it felt great. Those wins were wonderful that we experienced when our candidates did make it through. But Dr. Stevens talked about, chronic stress really started catching up with me. And so physically, I was having trouble. I was, tired a lot. I had some issues, crazy things like my hair falling out, which is sort of typical for people who are dealing with a lot of stress. And then I was using what we call in my business maladaptive coping mechanisms, like drinking too much, like smoking, doing things that weren't necessarily healthy for me to deal with stress. And so it all kind of caught up with me. And I recognized, things were happening to me, like I was having trouble with my memory, remembering things that were going on. I was having trouble, maintaining emotions because you kind of get on a roller coaster with stress. So I, ultimately got into therapy myself and realized I needed to take a step back and to start taking care of myself.
And that led you to help other people. When somebody comes to you, and a lot of people say they're stressed, because we all are, but when you're talking with someone and stress seems to be an issue, what are some of the factors or the signs that you really pick up on? You mentioned inability to sleep and hair loss. Those are a couple signs that maybe somebody's dealing with extreme stress. What else do you see?
Sure. So as far as sort of thinking signs that that stress is prevalent, a lot of worrying, predicting the worst, racing mind, negative thinking are all sort of cognitive signs of stress. Emotional, I see low mood, a sense of inadequacy, a lot of anxiety, maybe some frustration, anger, irritability, even panic. Physical symptoms can be things like headaches, stomach or GI problems. Even things like sweating or dizziness can be a sign of stress, and then sexual dysfunction. And behaviors are often things like I mentioned with me, memory problems, being forgetful. People tend to withdraw, isolate when they're under a lot of stress. Eating more or less, bringing in substance abuse, difficulty, smoking, anger. All can be signs that, if there's a cluster of these symptoms, that people are really having difficulty dealing with stress.
Well, I want to dig a little deeper into ways to manage stress, but let's start on the surface level. When somebody is showing these symptoms and seems to be dealing with a lot of stress, what are the first things you do to help them?
Well, first of all, I try to normalize their experience, to let them know it isn't just them that are having, that have these problems, that we all experience this if we're dealing with too much stress. That can be a real relief for folks, because I think a lot of times we think, oh, it's just me, I'm doing something wrong, there's something wrong with me, when actually what's happening is our bodies and minds are just telling us, hey, we're stressing out too much. So I try to normalize. And then I'm a mindfulness-based stress reduction instructor, mindfulness meditation teacher, use mindfulness myself to manage stress. So I often begin teaching my clients how to practice mindfulness meditation.
We were talking earlier, Dr. Stevens, about how that feeling of helplessness is one of the most difficult things for people to cope with. So when somebody is dealing with that feeling of helplessness, how can you help them begin to manage that stress if situations are really outside of their control?
Yeah, that becomes very difficult. I'm sure that Emily has the same experience, that if a person really does still have a chronic stressor occurring in their life, it would be in some ways very wrong of them to try to completely forget it or to only focus on other things. I think that you sort of try to take a step back. I think these techniques that Emily was talking about, mindfulness, some meditation, developing a little bit more balance in a person's life so that they get some of the healthy parts of their physiology going again. So working in if they're cutting back on sleep in order to deal with their stress, maybe trying to help a person establish a sleep schedule that's more healthy. This is harder to do than it seems.
Right.
It seems like, oh, that should just be something I can just easily do. Or working in a little physical activity. It doesn't have to be anything big. You know, I don't actually take these days time to actually exercise, but I try to ride my bike places and be more active that way, and that gives me a little bit of positive physiology that can help me cope with the sort of stressful physiology that sometimes occurs.
Well, and you mentioned physical activity. That can really change your body chemistry too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It can help your body regulate itself. It might be trapped in a state where it's sort of on overdrive, and it's always like, your heart is racing because you're thinking about all the negative things and the worries all the time. And this can teach your body again that there should be regulation to that, that when you're more physically active, your heart rate will go up, and then it kind of learns, when I'm done, I can sort of relax again, and it will help to sort of reestablish that normal response. And so these are really important components because these affect your brain, and then your brain allows you to cope with stress. So getting those things back online can really be critical to doing the further work that you would do with a psychotherapist like Emily, where you're going to start sort of working on the bigger pictures, maybe after you've dealt with the fact that you're sort of acutely overwhelmed by the chronic stress.
Right. So feel a little bit better on a daily basis and work on the long game as well. You are welcome to join our conversation with your questions, with your stories. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have an email from Angela. She says, I deal with stress with my nearly daily jazzercise classes. Exercise in a non-judgmental environment helps boost my confidence and reduce my stress. Caleb tweeted, he said, in my 20s, it was video games. Now that I'm a father, it's Legos. Nothing is better than building Legos with my son. And here's a question from Kelly. She says, I'm finding that my job maybe isn't the best fit for me, which causes stress about not being as successful as I feel I should be. But I'm feeling a lot of stress about making a transition to a new career. I worry about choosing the right career that's a better path, starting over at the bottom and possibly having to take on debt to go back to school. Can you share any advice with me about overcoming this doubt and stress with this transition? And Emily, I mean, I realize that we can't, we don't know everything about Kelly's life at this point, but if somebody came to you and they said that to you, how would you help them get started at dealing with that kind of stress?
Well, I think number one, to recognize change can be really difficult for us and can create rumination, worry, and stress. So I do hear this on a pretty regular basis in my office. And I think, first of all, it's looking at, what's happening in the workplace. Sometimes we think that if we change a job, everything's going to be fine. But in reality, it may be how we're perceiving the situation and how we're choosing to deal with it. I think Dr. Stevens mentioned perception, and that is a huge part of stress, how we perceive what's happening to us. So I would work with folks on their perception of the situation. And then if it feels like it really is something that's detrimental, to put together a plan of action. action, which can feel very empowering, of the steps that need to be taken to make a change.
And that's one of those situations. We were talking earlier, Dr. Stevens, about helplessness, although while she may feel helpless, like her life is out of her control, that's one of those situations where you can affect change.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually wanted to add another point, and this is partly taking control, that reaching out to people. I think a couple of your people responding on the internet had said, you know, part of their coping is connecting with people. In that Jazzercise class, she's with a group of people who aren't judgmental. Playing Legos with your son, you're connecting with another human being. Turning to a psychotherapist and asking for advice and asking for ways to work on things is a connection with another person. And from work even in other kinds of primates, not ourselves, we've found that that connection with our people around us or our you know, individuals of our family, of our group, of our society is one of the ways that stress management can occur. So stress is very social in its origins, but it can be very social in its coping as well.
We're going to take another short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me, Dr. Hannah Stevens. She's an assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of Iowa Carvage College of Medicine. Also with me, Emily Smith, a psychotherapist who owns Prairie Wellness in Des Moines. Coming up in just a moment, we'll also talk with a licensed mental health therapist who works with many immigrants to the United States, a population experiencing quite a lot of stress and concern, particularly right now. In a moment, we'll continue our conversation. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about stress, where our stress comes from, how it affects our bodies and brains and lives, and how to cope with stress. With me, Dr. Hannah Stevens. She's an assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine, who specializes in the study of stress. Emily Smith is here, a psychotherapist who owns Prairie Wellness in Des Moines. And I also want to bring into the conversation now Juan Hirona. He is a licensed mental health therapist with Life Connections in Dubuque. He's originally from Argentina, and many of his clients are also immigrants to the United States. Hello, Juan.
Hello, Charity. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here today. And I know you work with clients with all kinds of different concerns about life, but in the political climate that we're in right now, I can imagine that it's particularly concerning to be an immigrant in the United States. What kinds of things are you hearing from your clients?
So far, the Hispanic population is, I would say, here in Dubuque, is around 10%. And I've been trying to connect with them, and I've been trying to networking with them. With my clients, so far, no comments regarding the political situation. But I know that will be coming pretty soon. And personally, as an immigrant, that's creating a little bit of stress to myself, to be honest.
How are you dealing with that stress?
Well, utilizing a lot of coping skills and what Emily said and Dr. Steven, I completely agree with them. My wife is an American citizen, so kind of like joking or sometimes serious, say, well, this is gonna be our plan, honey. Like if we need to leave the state because I'm not a citizen, we're going to do this, and after that, this, and this, and this. So that's then providing a lot of relief.
Well, that's interesting, because you're bringing up two important coping mechanisms there. We haven't talked about humor. I think humor is a really important coping mechanism for a lot of us, isn't it?
Totally. It's putting everything on the table and laugh about it, and knowing that, well, in my personal situation, if the worst case scenario happens, we will deal with it and we will cope with that.
Well,
sure.
And that was the second thing that I was picking up on there, that you're looking at the worst case scenario and making a plan. And so even though, of course, you hope that the worst doesn't happen, you know what you would do to respond if it did happen. Does that bring you a little relief?
It brings a huge sense of relief, actually. And And as a mental health therapist, I ought to apply what I discuss with my clients. So it's a lot of evaluating my thinking patterns and try to arrive to a more realistic and adapted way to interpret this situation. And again, if it happens, there's a purpose behind it, and we will need to find that purpose. And I think that part is when the stress becomes something positive, as Dr. Steven was mentioning. That the stress is not bad. It's my body responding to a demand that I didn't have to experience before, and I have to experience now. And my body is helping me to cope and to respond with that situation appropriately.
I want to go to the phones. We have Armando on the line in Galena, Illinois, at 866-780-9100. Hello, Armando.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Wonderful. And you're dealing with a lot of stress with a similar situation. You feel like there's some animosity right now because you are an immigrant to the United States?
Yes, and because, you know, the word that we are calling, we are aliens. You know, I'm very nervous and very depressed about this because we are belittled. You know, like when you go to situations, like last night I was at a meeting, you know, people look at you, and I don't know if they feel sorry, but they just feel, you feel like inferior or something. You're an alien. And that is so stressful, and it isolates you, and it depresses you, and it makes you mad, and you wonder. It was not like that before, but now it's becoming much more visible. And I'm still the same, you know. I'm a person who became an American because I'm very proud of this country, or when I came here, or when I grew up, you know, in the 60s, it was just amazing. And now it's becoming like a nightmare or something. I don't know what happened.
So you've really noticed a change in the way people treat you?
Yes. You know, first of all, having moved to an area where 98.7% of the population are white Americans, but being a foreigner with an accent, it makes the things, and then Hispanic in addition to that, it makes the things, you know, you come to the point of your people prejudice, you know, without just having to know who you are or whatever, they get ideas in their mind about who you are, that you're an illegal, that you're uneducated, that you are maybe a criminal, you know, and not only that, but the calling of being an alien and, you know, go back to your country, which I have been told several times, you know, I go to a bar and I speak but express my opinion about something, it's like, get out of here, go back to where you came from or something. All what I wanted to say in this program is that if people can imagine themselves being in another place or just that suddenly you are considered an alien, that is quite depressive, I think. Because an alien is a dangerous creature, is someone who is not familiar, is not part of the group, you know, and may be a danger.
Right. So that the term alien is alienating, Armando, I'm so sorry that you're going through this right now. And Juan, before we let you go, do you have a response? I mean, if Armando came to you and told you what's going on in his life, he's dealing with stress that we've talked about that makes him feel helpless, that puts him in a really vulnerable position. What would you say?
Definitely, and I'm with you, Armando. I'm so sorry that this is happening to you. And I think you working with my clients, I always put emphasis on finding the perfect dynamic between accepting and changing things. The first thing, Armando, I think it is important for you to accept the fact that there are mean people out there. And sadly, there is no much that you can do to change that. There will be good days and there will be bad days. So that's a part of also accepting this situation, but don't stay there. I will encourage you to make some changes as well. And I know that in Galena, there's a fair amount of the Hispanic population there. So get a social support, get in contact, connect with others who are experiencing the same. I think that will, who knows, maybe you can start creating a support group for Hispanic citizens or something like that. And that could be really encouraging for you, and also that will create an impact, a positive impact in the life of others.
Well, Armando, thank you so much for your call. And Juan, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Oh, please. Thank you. I really appreciate it, and it's an honor to be here.
Juan Gerona is a licensed mental health therapist with Life Connections in Dubuque. He originally came to the United States from Argentina. He also works with many clients who came to Iowa from many places around the world. You're welcome to join our conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we've got a number of people on the phone. We're talking about stress this hour. I want to get to Charles on the line in Indianola. Hi, Charles.
Hi, good morning. I have had lifelong anxiety. I probably was worried that my mother was going to drop me when I was born. As a result of this anxiety, one of the things that helps me is art. I like to paint, and so in creating something, I find that I just lose myself completely in the project. And it's just been a real help to me. I lose all sense of time, all sense of anxiety. And then I have a question. Is it possible that a parent, could they affect the child? I had a parent who was extremely, extremely anxious person all of her life. And my mother, I'm wondering if she could have passed something like the need for adrenaline. I'm sure she had high doses of adrenaline, and I know that it can be life-threatening for not only the brain but in cardiac situations. I'd like to hear someone speak to that.
Yeah, Charles, thank you so much for your call. And there are a number of things there that I think we should address. Dr. Stevens, and this is an area of research for you, prenatal stress and the relationship between parent and child with stress. So Charles's question, can a parent pass this kind of thing on to a child?
So, you know, we do know that something like an anxiety disorder, they do run in families in the sort of genetic sense that it may be passed down through the genes you inherit from your parents, you know, some from each one, and it can increase your risk to have the same kind of issues going on. And I do think that there's another component here that we know that the interaction of parents and kids learn a lot from how to cope with life from their parents. And if parents aren't able to cope themselves very well, they may have difficulty, for no fault of their own, in being able to give their child support that they need. There's a lot of great ways that psychiatrists, child psychiatrists, that's my job, work with parents to try to help them be there for kids that might have anxiety, or for parents to manage how their own anxiety might influence things. And I wouldn't want to paint a totally negative picture here, too, because people, obviously, the caller has great resilience as well, has found amazing ways to cope with stress using art and creativity. And those are kinds of things that can get passed down as well. So it may be that art and creativity runs in your family, or something you learned in your early life that actually can help you cope with those things. So it's not all on the negative, but both of those things can happen. The exposure sort of to how a parent interacts with a child, but also these things come through genetics and sort of what we inherit.
He also was talking about being a very anxious person. What's the difference between anxiety and stress?
Oh, great question. So anxiety is a particular kind of response to stress, but also if it becomes to a level that's very interfering, can occur even in the absence of stress, which a person that has an anxiety disorder, that's kind of what's going on. They may have anxiety even when they don't need to have anxiety. So anxiety is a normal response. And if we didn't have anxiety, we wouldn't be able to, for example, be motivated to study for tests or to perform well at our job. And we need to have some anxiety. When anxiety gets out of control, it responds disproportionately to the thing that's happening, or happens even when there isn't something that should make it appear. That's when we start to worry, because those kinds of same physiological responses in your body can have the same impact of chronic stress.
Well, Charles, thank you so much for your call, and I want to get on back to the phones. Lissa's on the line in Decorah. Hi, Lissa.
Hello.
Hi, and you're experiencing a lot of stress right now.
I am experiencing a lot of stress, not necessarily because of, well, indirectly because of the political situation, because I work with a lot of people who are really stressed about it. So even if I kind of psych myself up to go into work every day and try to keep a handle on my stress to do my, you know, regular job, which can be stressful enough, I also have this additional stress of the stress of the others around me, you know, in a busy workplace environment. So finding it a challenge to... Pardon?
No, we didn't say anything, but just finding it a challenge to stay positive, to move forward?
Right, and to not let that stress of others increase mine.
Well, Lissa, thank you so much for bringing that up. I think that's the thing a lot of people are feeling right now. And Emily, what's your response to that? When, for example, if people are worried about politics right now, they are also surrounded by a social network, sometimes literally a social network online that may be feeding that anxiety. What would you say about that?
Yeah, it's a real problem for folks. We're getting inundated with, you know, Facebook feeds and friends who are really struggling with stress around what's happening in our country. So what I recommend to try to do is to both, again, to acknowledge that this is a really difficult time for all of us, and then to find a few things we can do each day. So, for example, I call my legislators each day. I have a little list. I spend 5 or 10 minutes doing that. It's not anything that's overwhelming my time, but I feel like I have contributed to helping the situation. So I also have tried to find a network of people who I can talk about what's happening. So, you know, it's tough in a work environment, and it may be you can ask to have folks, you know, meet after work for a drink and to discuss what's going on instead of bringing it into the work environment. But having people who are supporting your views is important.
Well, Lissa's in a field where she has to be apolitical. She's a reporter. So that kind of takes away that. Obviously, you know, putting your effort into what you do for a living as a job, obviously, if you feel like it's an important thing to do, that can give you a little bit of that sense of control. But we've talked a lot this hour about different stressors where people will worry and their minds may get caught in that loop of worry, whatever's going on in your life, whatever's stressing you out. And Dr. Stevens, what kind of advice would you give to somebody to help them jump out of that loop?
I think that idea of positive feelings can be really helpful. Not only does something like doing a little something to contribute every day give you a sense that you've contributed, but it gives you a sense of reward. And that's actually something that has an effect on your brain directly. Those chemicals that come on when you feel good about something you've done and feel rewarded are actually going to help your brain to think better
and learn. Dr. Stevens, we are out of time. And thank you so much for being here today. Dr. Hannah Stevens from the University of Iowa and Emily Smith of Prairie Wellness.